theologians and philosophers and scientists are always pondering the imponderable. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with a thought for today. Theologians and philosophers and scientists are always thinking about, always pondering over the impossible. And what is it that makes these things impossible? Certainly not the science or the philosophy or the religion. What makes it impossible is that when we hear the message, we don't follow up on it. We don't take time to see what it's all about. Now, all the messages from science, from philosophy, and from religion, all these messages come with one clarion call, one tone, one voice, and they all say, listen within yourself for the answer. Now, why would they all say, listen within yourself for the answer? Why would they all say that you can search outwardly for the answer, but you'll find that whatever answers you find outwardly, they'll be the same ones you find inwardly? Whatever sort of responses you find to life's queries in the outer are the same responses you'll find to life's questions, life's pondering on the inner. Because we become still and we listen to a greater voice than we are within us, a voice that reveals to us the isness, the allness of the universe. We say greater than we are only because we haven't really listened to it very often. We haven't really paid attention to it. We haven't really given it the attention that we could. Not that we should, but that we could. Because no one has to know all these things. No one has to wonder about them. No one has to ponder the infinite. But it's always kind of charming, kind of interesting to do it. At the breakfast table today, we were talking about what is a practitioner and what is a proctor in working with student lessons and what is a teacher. And as we were talking about these things, we came up with the realization that all of these roles that are played by teachers in schools and we here at the university, all these roles that we play are merely ways of expressing who and what we are. Just as a mother looks at her child and says to her child, I know there's greatness in you, then if the mother said, and we're going to find it, we're going to get the, I demand the best out of you at all times. I demand that the finest that you can be at all times. I demand you to be whole and perfect at all times. I demand you to be the ideal being, the ideal isness, the ideal allness. And should a mother unwisely act that way toward her children, they will distance themselves from her as much as possible. Should a teacher expect from her students their finest and their best, the teacher will find a distance between themselves and the student, which is one that can never be breached, one that can never be broached, one that can never be passed over, one that can never be understood. And you think to yourself, well, my goodness, isn't that what we really want to do? We want to see all of our students, all of our friends, all of our family, all of our children, our wife, our husband, whoever we have, We want to see them be their best. And we expect the best out of them, and we think we're being so noble when we expect the best out of them. If we look with the eyes of the master teacher, he so gently said to all who came to him, "What wouldst thou of me? What do you want from me? I am the Christ. I am the divine. I am the allness. I am the isness. And I see you as a fully revealed person right now. I see you wonderful. I see you fantastic. I see you with no question on your mind for me. I see you with no question on your mind for yourself. I see you just being the allness that I am." And this master teacher, as do all master teachers, looked at each person that came into their presence, and they saw them as the ideal. They saw them already revealed, already fulfilled. Perhaps the individual was not aware that they were fulfilled and revealed. Perhaps the individual felt they could be better, felt they could be more revealed, more exciting about what life is all about, more excited about what life has to offer and is. But the philosopher, the unconditional lover, the teacher, the minister, whomever the person may be, the parent, they look at themselves and they say, "I like me." And they like themselves because they are who they are because of their choice. And they look at every person that comes into their world as already fulfilled, already revealed, already magnificent. Not to be, not an unfulfilled being, not a musician in the making, not a work in progress, but a complete, fulfilled experience of magnificence and allness right now. Have you ever taken the time to sit down with yourself and listen to yourself and say, "I like me. I'm a very happy person. I like me. It's so gentle, it's so wonderful. I like me. I'm so content and so peaceful. I really like me." Have you ever sat down and just thought to yourself, "My, what a good person I am. What a lovely person I am. I see in all the world all of myself. I see in all the world beauty fulfilled. I see in all the world harmony and love, unconditional love, being expressed at all times. There is nothing to achieve. There is nothing to gain. There's nothing to grow. All is fulfilled. I see the plant as fulfilled in every way. I see the child, a revealed being. I don't see the innocence of the child. I don't see the quietude of the child. I don't see the lack of learning of the child. I see the child as a revealed being, unconditionally loving that child. I see it as a fulfilled being. And it is. I proclaim about children and childhood that a child, like a baby or any age, has within them all the genius they will ever be, and that's the allness that ever exists. But they are developing the tools with which to express that allness. And if a child were able to utilize its abilities, if a child were able to utilize the reality that it is, it would be the greatest orator ever to walk the face of the earth, the greatest musician, the greatest of everything, not superior to anything else, but just the fulfilled concept. Not waiting until an older year when it could express itself as a beautiful musician of one sort or another, or writer, or an artist, or a father, a mother, or whatever. Little children know how to get along with one another if they aren't limited by what their parents teach them. Little children speak with one another even though they may not have the same language, and they communicate beautifully. They communicate with the universal language, the language of unconditional love. When parents teach children that they must own and possess things, and they must have certain limitations that they don't have with other people. You don't associate with that person, that's a bad person, or that's a good person. When children don't have those limitations for themselves, they are revealed masters. And we cause them to lose that revealed master awareness when we start putting limitations on who they are, and who they associate with, and who they live with. If a child is a beautiful child, he will associate with beautiful children. If a child is a magical child, he'll associate with magical children. If a wife is a magical wife, she'll have a magical husband. And if a husband is an enduring, unconditionally loving, magical person, he will have an unconditionally loving, enduring, magical wife. This is the law of cause and effect. This is the principle upon which we govern our lives. Now, we talked about what is a person who is a practitioner. We said that a practitioner is not someone who helps another person find their goodness and find their reality, but a practitioner is someone who already sees that person revealed and lives in their consciousness as though that person is revealed, because that's how they see them, and that is how they treat them. Now, the other person may not be able to live up to what the practitioner sees in them, but the practitioner sees also whatever they do, unconditionally loving, a gentleness, a cleanliness, a beautifulness, a quality of beingness, which is so fulfilling and so enduring. Now, the dear proctor who works with the students doing their lesson, should I tell them what to do? Should I tell them how to do different things? No. The proctor tells the student what is required of the student in the various courses, in the various programs the student's working with. And if the student wants to do it, fine. If the student doesn't want to do it, fine. But the proctor, with unconditional love, tells the student what are the rules, the guidelines of the program that would help them to reveal the divinity, the magic, the wonder that's within them. The proctor already sees that student as fulfilled. The proctor already sees that student as unconditionally loving. And the proctor is unconditionally loving, and the student is revealing exactly what it chooses to reveal. And the proctor finds praise in their heart for the student, for every step along the way. And when the student does something remarkably good, the proctor praises that to the high heavens. And when a student does something that is not too good, but is on the way, the proctor praises the process by which the student is moving on the way. If that's the game we want to play, where we're working with people to learn the process, at least the process that the humans use, then that's what we do. We share what the rules are. As we often say, there are no rules in the Absolute Monastery. There are no rules at the university. There's a program. And if you want to call that program a rule, then you limit yourself. But the program is just a program. And if you follow the program, then you are, so to speak, living those rules, and you are following the rules. But you don't call them rules because they are now part of your enduring makeup. When a child is unconditionally loving toward itself and others, that might be a rule. If you are unconditionally loving toward yourself and others, you will find that all the world finds is unconditionally loving to you. You find all the world is unconditionally loving to you. Is that what we want? Is that what we choose to have? Is that what makes our life the enduring, beautiful, joyful experience that it is? People often say to me, "Herb, you have so much unconditional love." And I find that a lovely thing for them to say. Because this is what I choose to do. I choose to look at everyone with unconditional love. Oh, I will play games with them, I will act with them, and I will shout at them, and I will get their attention sometimes. But I will get their attention not because I want them to think and believe what I believe, but I want their attention to the fact that they already are what they believe they are. They already are fulfilled and beautiful and glorious and wonderful. They already are the epitome of the essence of life itself, the quality, the goodness of life itself. We find it rather difficult to say of a person who is unconditionally loving that they are doing something bad. We find it very difficult to say of a person who is unconditionally loving that they are not doing something desirable. We find that difficult indeed, because that is the goal that all of us intuitively are seeking, introspectively are seeking, desirably are seeking. And as these things are being sought in our heart and our soul and our being, we no longer judge others how well they are walking their path. We no longer judge ourselves how well we are walking in a path. And we say, "I like me, I like me, I like me." We say all the affirmations, all the inspirations that lift our heart and spirit. We say all that we want to say that lifts us up into who and what we are. We are beautiful beings. We are beings who are glorious and wonderful. We are beings who are divine. We are beings who are ideal. And when you are ideal, you have an ideal mate. When you are ideal, you have ideal friends. When you are ideal, you have an ideal family. When you are ideal, you live in an ideal world, a world filled with goodness, abundance, wholeness, right action, peace, joy right now. This is what it's all about. So often, as we sit around the meal table at the Absolute Monastery. Questions come up, ideas come up, thoughts come up. And sometimes some people will say the most difficult thought that you could imagine. And they will say, this is, and say it dogmatically, this is so. And if we were to listen to them, we would be challenged to say, no, it isn't so. Am I a little different, lineup on that, a little different thought about it? But you see, if we are unconditionally loving, we say to ourselves, they're expressing it that way. How interesting. They're expressing it in that manner. How joyous. They are being themselves and having fun. And you see, as we do that here at the monastery, we are constantly uplifting ourselves to see how beautiful everyone else is. And as we delight in little children finding the words to express themselves, so we delight in our associates and our friends in finding the words and finding the actions and finding the life to express themselves and who they really are. It's a glorious and magnificent experience to do, but it takes a lot of I like me to allow myself to do that. Because I'm not my brother's teacher, I'm not my brother's helper, I'm not my brother's keeper. I'm not the keeper of my students, of my world, of my family, of my life. I am responsible for myself and how I think beautiful thoughts and how I speak beautiful words and how I live a beautiful life, a life of unconditional love, ever fulfilling, ever revealing, ever rewarding. Life is wonderful indeed. Think on these things and you will be really with the Absolute Monastery here as we have our meals together and share these thoughts together. And you, as us, will say with unconditional love, I like me. I like me. I like me. And you know I could say that because I love you. I love you. I love you.